Giles has just scampered into the studio. Hi, Giles.
Good morning, Kim. How's
it going? Business news.
Business news indeed. In the bulletin this morning, another blow to a couple of local banks. Big investors make climate change an issue. And I'll bring you the latest from the money markets. Well, two of Australia's big banks and their New Zealand operations have taken another hit. Credit rating agency Fitch has lowered the outlook for Westpac and ANZ banks in Australia and New Zealand. It's lowered the outlooks for both to negative from stable, although it's confirmed their ratings remain AA negative. The move comes after the Australian Prudential Regulation Authority, which is Australia's bank regulator, ordered the main banks there to each set aside a further $500 million Australian dollars until they strengthen their risk management systems and reimburse customers for wrongly charged fees. Fitch says the increased focus on compliance and operational concerns may mean less resources for operations, and that might potentially weaken earnings. It says there are now material shortcomings in operational risk management, that's its words, which didn't fit with Fitch's previous ratings assessment. The ANZ says Fitch's change in outlook for the bank is consistent with that of the other three big Australian banks. A group of sovereign and global fund managers with $2 trillion worth of funds want better disclosure from companies about their climate change risks. The investor group for climate change includes the New Zealand Super Fund and major investment firms such as BlackRock. It's backing the government's zero carbon bill, but says parts need to be beefed up, such as the rules around disclosure of climate risks to investments. The chief executive of the group, Emma Heard, says financial regulators such as the Reserve Bank are starting to ask the right questions.
But what we really need is the zero carbon bill to really pick this up and run with it. Investors, markets, all players across the economy, when they're better informed, make better decisions. And getting a standardised approach to climate change disclosure is really key and really important in that regard. New Zealand's probably a little bit behind what we've seen in some other markets, but this is an area where it's very easy to catch up very quickly and the benefits are immediate for everyone.
So what does good disclosure in this sort of space look like in your view?
The good disclosure is less about the issues associated with climate change, and it's all about understanding the financial material impacts and issues for the company or for the organisation and for the economy as a whole. What investors are really looking for is disclosure which focuses on the risks that are most financially material for the company, information on how the company is managing it from a business strategy perspective, how they're positioning for the transition, and then also publishing information which is investable and usable for investors who are looking to manage climate risk in their own portfolio and put capital into companies that are managing it really well.
That's Emma Heard, who chairs the Investor Group for Climate Change. She was talking to Kim Savage. Well, the government's main digital technology advisor says it's giving all the advice necessary, even though it's only met once this year. The Digital Economy and Digital Inclusion Advisory Groups had a 45-minute video conference in April to discuss technology industry's response to the Christchurch terror attacks and to confirm its work programme. The chair of the group, Victoria McLennan, says diary clashes have made it hard to meet this year, but it has provided advice on digital inclusion, the use of local tech companies, and the level of digital adoption among small businesses. She says the group is doing its job and officials are listening.
So obviously we've had different ministers who have different priorities and different things. And the vision that Minister Curran had when she set the group up, the way that Minister Woods has used us subsequently, and as I've said, we haven't yet met with Minister Farfoy, have had different goals and different interests, but we're there to strengthen the thinking of the ministers on topics that they're interested in and give them an opinion that's not one that's coming to basically strengthen their thinking and give them an alternative opinion to that they're getting from other parties, including their officials. So we're definitely fulfilling that function.
Do you feel like the government has been responsive in prioritising this group and its members' thoughts?
I don't have anything to compare it with, so I can't really comment on that because I haven't been involved in other government groups, so I'm not really sure how those priorities are applied. I personally have found engaging with Minister Woods throughout the year, which I have done on behalf of the group. So she has been engaged, focused and really interested in everything that we have had to say.
That's Victoria McLennan, who chairs the Digital Economy and Digital Inclusion Advisory Group, talking to Madison Reedy. And staying with technology, technology and social media heavyweights have been appearing before United States lawmakers over the past day to face questions about their power, privacy and competition in the sector, not to mention their finances. All the big names have been there: Facebook, Apple, Google, Amazon. And they've been quizzed by policymakers about their trustworthiness and responsibility in how they conduct their affairs, treat their users, and behave generally. There have been calls in the past to break up the companies for being too big to be trusted. But a former chief technologist at the Federal Trade Commission in the States, Ashkan Sultani, says breaking them up may not be the answer, but he sees greater controls coming.
One of, I think, the key concerns that Congress, which is echoing the public's concern, is the size and dominance of these companies, both in terms of our everyday lives, but also in terms of the market and market power, right? The ability to, for example, using Libra, which you were just talking about, have insights as to market trends and acquire or purchase competitors, would-be competitors, or uprising kind of upstarts before they get huge, right? And so I think the goal would be to prevent that kind of anti-competitive market behavior. And to do that, breaking them up simply wouldn't be sufficient because they could just simply join back up again or grow those parts of their business using the dominant firm. I think there is a convergence of issues at play. As I said, data privacy, antitrust, censorship, free speech, all arising, one, from the power of platforms, and two, from the corrosive business models around kind of surveillance economy or surveillance capitalism. And so what I suspect is we will see some intervention soon from Congress. We have one in the U.S. here in California. We passed a law, consumer privacy law. You in Europe have the GDPR. We'll probably see something in the next 2 years to help curb some of this dominance by large tech. How effective that will be still remains to be seen.
That's Ashkan Sultani, a former chief technologist at the U.S. Federal Trade Commission. Let's have a look at the markets now. Wall Street modestly lower. Company earnings report showing some evidence that they are being hit by the U.S.-China trade disputes. Dow Jones Industrial Average, it had been flat for most of the session, but in the past half hour or so, it's been down around 50 points. That's just under a fifth of a percent. And the other main indices are also a touch softer. Our own top 50 index also subdued, but it did make a positive close, gaining 4 points, 10,655. On the currency front, the New Zealand dollar quite firm, 67.4 US cents, that's a 3-month high, 96 Australian, that's a 4-month high, 54.2 British pence, 0.60 euro, 72.8 Japanese yen, 4.63 yuan. Brent crude oil down 65 cents, that's about 1%, $63.70 US a barrel, and gold is up $16, $1,422 US dollars an ounce. In other business news, the number of Chinese visitors moving through Auckland airports fallen nearly 14% in the month of May. That was after Hong Kong Airlines pulled the pin on its direct service between the two cities. International passenger movements were up almost 1% in the year to May for the airport, with domestic passenger movements up more than 3%.